This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Nuance Dragon Ambient Experience, or DAX for short. This AI-powered ambient technology helps the physician be more efficient and reduce clinical documentation burden, because we all need that. To learn more about how DAX Copilot can help reduce burnout and restore the joy of practicing medicine, stick around after the episode or visit nuance.com/discover DAX. That's nuance.com/discover DAX.
Hi.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Knock Knock I with your host, me, Dr. Glockenflecken. It's just me. I'm by myself. I think my dog's somewhere around here. My kids are in bed. My wife has retired to the bedroom. That means I have the run of the house. And you know what I like to do when I am all alone down here? Talk about eyeballs. Why? What would you do? What weird things do you got? I imagine it's not weirder than that. We got some good eyeball topics today. I'm answering a couple of your questions that you guys sent me. I think most of these come from YouTube. And in general, we're just going to have some fun with eyes. All right? You're one-stop shop for all things eyeball. That's what we're doing here on Knock Knock Eye. If you want to hear about other parts of the body, go somewhere else. I'm not here for that, all right? You want to hear about the liver? Sorry. I can give you some clinical correlation, some overlap between, maybe I'll do an episode of just connecting eyeballs to other parts of the body. Ooh, that's a good idea. See, if I just keep talking to myself here, I eventually come up with good stuff to tell you guys about. All right, I'm going to jot that one down in my mind. So we'll do that next time, maybe. Or I got a few topics that are coming down the pipe today. Before we get into our topics, I want to just give you a little recap of what's been going on in my life. So it is springtime, and I just recently got back from a speaking trip. April and May, lots of conferences, lots of events. It's also a big time of the year for advocacy groups in medicine. Like, so many organizations descend upon Washington, D.C. to go and talk to their congresspeople and do all that. So there's a lot of rallying together as physicians to talk about all the things we need to advocate for in our profession. A lot of times that means like bringing in some speakers. And so let's see, what did I do? So this past weekend, I went to Washington, D.C. to speak to clinical oncologists, which is always a good time because I got some fun cancer jokes, if you can imagine, with my bilateral testicular cancer. So I told a lot of sperm jokes, some sperm banking, some lack of testicle jokes. It's all over the map. It's you know, you can have a good time with it, and you got to, because like, what good is it? My testicles didn't. It helped me in the production of two children, I suppose. My wife did most of the work there, but then that was it. They gave up. They got cancer. I was like, "What good are you?" And so I got rid of them. Anyway, got a lot of jokes about that. So I went to D.C. for that, and the clinical oncologists, they're wanting more research funding, which is great. They're big proponents of telemedicine too. That's an interesting thing. Which I did a little bit of telemedicine as an ophthalmologist at the beginning of the pandemic. I lasted about 2 weeks before I was losing my mind. You can imagine ophthalmology, it's a very visual, so to speak, specialty. I have to look at everything I'm diagnosing and treating. And so we were doing telemedicine because everything was shut down. And I was just like, I was having these people put their phone up to their eye and it was just a blurry image and people couldn't figure out where their camera was. And again, most of my patients, they're older. And I'm not being mean here. I'm just saying it how it is. As you get older, you start to struggle with technology a little bit. I'm already feeling it. Kristen, actually, she's the tech person in the house. She helped and figured out how to set up this podcast. I'm just along for the ride. I'm somewhat useless when it comes to technology. All my videos are just me holding up a phone in front of my face because I can't figure out a way to do it better. So anyway, I'm not one for telemedicine, but it's very important to the clinical oncologist and a lot of specialists out there. A lot of specialties are really into clinical medicine. And I get it because, I mean, it's just kind of the way of the future. Like, we need to figure out how to do really effective telemedicine because it's efficient. And for certain areas of medicine, you can do most of what you need to do because a lot of it's with clinical oncology is talking about chemotherapy regimens and you know, the risks and benefits and you know, outcomes and prognosis, and all of these things don't require a physical examination in the room with somebody. And so I totally get it. I totally get the need for telemedicine, even though I hope I never have to do it ever again, I can appreciate other people that really need it. Yeah. And drug shortages, that was the other thing they were big on. So shout out to the clinical oncologist. Thanks for bringing me out. ASCO, that's the organization. And then a couple weeks back, it's really exciting. It sounds like I do a lot of speaking. I do a lot of speaking, but it's concentrated to certain times of year. So spring and fall are really big times for conferences. So I'm always on the road doing things. It's fun. One of the fun things about it is sometimes I get to go to places I've never been to. Like, there are certain states that have a ton of events. So Florida, I go to Florida so much. California, Texas is a big one. But I got to go somewhere I'd never been before. I got to check off another state in America. I got to go to North Dakota. I got to go to Fargo, North Dakota. I'd never been there before. The North Dakota Medical Association reserved the Fargo Theater. It's this historic theater. It's been open for like over 100 years, and they invited all the physicians in the whole state to this theater, and we just had an awesome time. I did a bunch of stand-up comedy, and people brought there were some unicorn hats. There was a group of infectious disease doctors that called themselves the Closers. They made shirts and everything. They had their sunglasses. They had the Closer or the Closers on it. It was fantastic. I loved it. Got a picture with them. And so just a good time. I love doing those because I feel like people need it for one thing. Like it's just, you know, I don't even know if people outside of medicine understand how rare it is for like physicians to be able to get together and just have a good time, like enjoy each other's company outside of work, where you're not talking about work, even though a lot of my jokes were medicine related. So I kind of made them think about it a bit, but that's okay. Just getting together and having fun in an evening. And it was great. It was a wonderful trip. Now, I was a little nervous about going to North Dakota. I wasn't sure what to expect with Fargo. And I got to say, when I went to college at Texas Tech University, Lubbock, Texas, West Texas, very flat. And when I was there, I remember thinking, like, there's no way in my life I will ever be in a place that's windier and flatter than it is here in Lubbock, Texas. And then I went to Fargo, North Dakota. That place honestly had me thinking, maybe the earth is flat. I was questioning my own sense of reality being in Fargo, North Dakota. That is a flat, flat place. So I was in like one of the tallest buildings in the city. I was on the third floor, and which is the top floor, I think. I was looking out the window. It was actually a wonderful hotel. It was great. I could look down onto the Fargo Theater on the Main Street there. I'm not sure it's called Main Street. I'm sure it's not. But anyway, I'll call it Main Street. I looked out over the city, and I could just see all the water towers, like in all the surrounding communities. It was really remarkable. I could see like 12 or 14 of them. Anyway, very flat place. the weather was nice. It was nice. I was pleasantly surprised. It was April. There wasn't any snow on the ground. No snow whatsoever. And the weather, it was fine. Just had a light jacket on. And the people were wonderful. Absolutely wonderful people there. They actually embraced the movie Fargo. I was wondering about that. I was like, do they like disown that movie? Is it like, do they not like it when people bring up the movie? But I think they've embraced it. They have like, there's like wood chip Marge, which is like a statue they have there. So I think they've like come to appreciate it. It brought some fame to the city of Fargo. It's just a wonderful place. I really do encourage you visit. If you have a chance, if you're like maybe doing a cross country trip somewhere, you want to go through Fargo, go check it out. It's great. I had some good food there. I had some, hot dish. Had a little bit of hot dish. Yeah. That was one of the suggestions. Tater tot hot dish. Although this was more like a chicken pot pie, or not a chicken pot pie, but a pot pie, hot dish pot pie. That's what they called it. Anyway, thank you to all of you who may be listening from North Dakota or anywhere close to it. Really enjoyed meeting you all. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with our eyeball topics.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda. Whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch, find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
All right, so I'm going to start off with a great question that I received. You guys send me good questions about these, so keep doing that, especially on YouTube. I see all of those suggestions. So if you have eyeball topics you want me to touch on, or just general questions about vision, about glasses, about whatever, send them to me there. You can also email us, knockknockhi@human-content.com. And I can see all those. So this is a good question that came from @birchmonkey857. Said, I have a question. I literally just got glasses for the first time. Congratulations! You did it! You got glasses. It's a good thing. Glasses are in, by the way, folks. All right? They're no longer like just for nerds. They're for cool people. Therefore, anybody who's successful in life has glasses. I don't have glasses. I'm still working on it, all right? I'll get there eventually. I don't have glasses. So I literally just got glasses for the first time, and how in the hell are you supposed to keep them consistently clean? Yes, thank you so much, Birch Monkey. Newly bespectacled. That's a word I just made up, I think. This newly bespectacled Birch Monkey, thank you for asking that question. How do you keep glasses clean? All right, let's go through this. You don't need special sprays and detergents. You don't need all this. All right, this is very simple. All right, so you take your glasses, you run them over just warm water, tap water, okay? And you get them wet there. It also gets off any like easy debris that just kind of falls off. Then you take just a little bit of first of all, you got to make sure your hands are clean because you're going to clean them with your hands. So make sure your hands are clean. You get your lenses wet and then you take some dish soap, nothing with lotion, no added things to it. All right. Just regular old mild dish soap, no like extra strength, nothing. You're not trying to strip anything off of your glasses. You just want to clean them, right? So you're just average, normal dish soap. No lotion. That's a big one. No lotion. And then you just get some of that soap, you know, between your fingers, and you just rub it all over the lenses, all right? So you're getting the lenses all nice and soapy. You can do this under running water. That's okay. And then it doesn't take much, just a few seconds with each lens. And then you rinse it, right? You rinse it under that water, get all the soap off of it. Once you got all the soap off, then you dry them. You can either do two things. One, you can dry your glasses, you can air dry them. Now, this is really important whenever everybody was wearing masks. because the biggest complaint everyone had was that like the glasses were fogging up, right? People eventually figured out how to deal with that. You either tape over the mask or whatever. But if you air dry your lenses after you wash them, it leaves this surfactant layer on the glasses that can prevent fogging from occurring. Okay, so air drying your lenses after you wash them can actually, you leave a little this soapy residue that can actually protect against fogging up and condensation from forming. Similar thing when you're trying to get your like goggles, swim goggles from fogging up, you know, same general principle. Dry, and then, but if you don't want to wait, you don't want to sit there and like air dry your glasses, you can dry them with a clean microfiber cloth or any lint-free thing, any lint-free towel, hand towel, cloth, whatever, lint-free. All right, very gentle. It doesn't take much, just dab it, get them dry, hold them up to the light. They're going to be great. You're good to go. All right. That's it. That's easy. Don't forget your nose pads. All right. If you have nose pads on your glasses, like that gets, those things get nasty. So you can just, you know, actually a little bit of rubbing alcohol is pretty good for the nose pads. You don't have to be as gentle. Don't get rubbing alcohol on the lenses. All right. That's going to strip off coatings and stuff. You don't need that. And it doesn't take much. So you don't have to go crazy with it. Just if you're doing it, I encourage you actually like once a day, you should do this to your glasses. You know, get them clean, keep them clean. They'll last longer. It's good. Here's what you don't do. All right. You don't use your shirt. Don't use your shirt. I don't care how soft it is. It's not soft enough. All right. It's going to scratch. Just trying to clean your lenses when they're dry, like you just rub the lenses, that's the easiest way to scratch your lenses. That's why I'm talking about doing this under running water, all right? Or when the lenses are wet, that's when you clean them. All right, so trying to like wipe them off with something, even a lens safe cloth isn't great when you're just cleaning them dry, all right? You can do that in a pinch, but you risk actually causing more damage to the lenses when you do that. So no paper towels, no toilet paper. Just toilet paper is not used for that purpose. Okay. Dryer sheets. I've seen people do that. Your own spit. Believe it or not, saliva is really nasty. You got a lot of bacteria in your mouth. Your mouth is not antibacterial. I think that's what I was trying to say. So don't use spit to clean your glasses. Don't use spit to clean, God forbid, you use them to clean your contacts. The people that do that are just, you almost don't deserve eyes, all right? I'm glad you have them, but you're abusing them. If you try to clean your contacts with spit, don't put those things in your mouth unless you're willing to just spit them out and throw them away. But don't get me onto contacts because I could go all day. That's pretty much it. All right. It's really simple. That's how you clean your glasses. All right. Keep them lasting a long, long time. Good question. I can't believe I haven't addressed that yet. That's a really good one. All right. Let's talk about, how about we talk about migraines today? Let's do migraines, shall we? Because today in clinic, I did see a couple of migraine patients, and migraine's tough because this is actually coming from somebody anonymous. Anonymous said, can you please do an episode about ocular migraines and regular migraines? I get both, and it would be great to hear something from an ophthalmologist perspective. I would, So we're talking about, we'll talk about migraines here. First thing, a very important part of this, is I am not a migraine expert. I am not a headache expert. In fact, I really enjoy being able to say to patients, you know what? Your eyes are fine. Why don't you talk to your neurologist about your migraines? As far as migraine treatment goes, because a lot of people come in, they have migraines. They've been having them for a while. They can be really severe. I don't know like the latest. There's like new medications. There's like injectables. You can do like Botox places that get rid of migraines. That is not my area of expertise. All right. So as far as treatment of migraines, I'm not much help there, folks. Okay. So go find the nearest internet comedian neurologist to tell you about that. All right. Probably going to look like me, but you know, how, as I usually do with a Phi Beta Kappa tie, that's what you're looking for. Maybe a bow tie. That's you need someone with a bow tie. Have someone with a bow tie explain to you migraines. All right. That's, you know, they know what they're talking about when they're wearing a bow tie. All right. Not now, not this, not me looking haggard and I need to shave and this look bad. This is the type of person that can tell you about ocular migraines. Okay. So let's talk about those. So first of all, ocular migraine is a misnomer. Shocking. It says, I know you must have gasped when you heard that. It's not actually like an eye migraine. No, it actually has nothing to do with the eyes. An ocular migraine has nothing to do with your eyes. It's a brain problem. It's happening in your brain. All right, specifically the visual cortex. So an ocular migraine is, we call it an ocular migraine just to distinguish it from other types of migraines. All right, because migraine, there's so much to migraine. All right, so classically, there's two types of people that will typically get these. All right, we do have like a large group of young people. People who have been getting them from a young age, so from teenagers to people in their 20s and 30s, and then I see a lot of people that start getting them later in life. So we're talking now, you know, 60s, 70s. My dad, he's in his 60s. He started getting ocular migraines not too long ago. He had never had any prior history of them. That can happen. It is pretty common in people who have a history of migraines. Like they had migraine headaches early in life. They eventually they grew out of them, so to speak. They stopped having migraines. Then all of a sudden in their 60s, they start having visual migraines, ocular migraines. So a visual migraine, I will use that term often because that is actually a more accurate description of what we're talking about. And so what these are, it's a migraine, which is like a kind of a spreading depolarization of a certain part of the brain. So this will happen starting in the back of the brain in the visual cortex. So when your eyes, you know, the optic nerves, they collect all the signal from your retina. It goes to the optic nerve, and those optic nerves are basically cables that go and connect to your brain. And then through a series of neurons, they eventually all go around to the back part of the brain, the occipital lobe. That's where everything is processed, all right? So you need that occipital lobe. It's very important for your vision. So if you have an ocular migraine, you're having this migraine, which is, for lack of a more impressive sounding description of a migraine, spreading depolarization, activation, whatever you want to call it, of that part of the brain, all right, that gives the patient a change in their vision. So I'm going to describe very classically what we usually hear. So an ocular migraine, the classic description is it starts off small. It can be a circle, a shape, like a circle is a shape, a square, diamonds, jagged lines, edges. People describe them in all different ways, but often geometric shape is a common description. Starts off small and slowly enlarges over the course of about 15, 20, 30 minutes, less than an hour typically, and then it slowly goes away. The whole thing lasts less than an hour. And sometimes there's color to this. Sometimes they're scintillating, they're kind of shimmering. They look like a rainbow sometimes. You can get like big rainbows. That's what some people describe them that way. They're complex visual phenomenon. All right. As opposed to like, say, a floater, which is just literally in your eye. It just casts a shadow on your retina. So it's not going to be formed. It's not going to be pretty to look at, right? A floater, it's just like a string or a dot or a strand or a spider web or a cloud of something just coming in and out of your vision. That's not interesting. But a migraine, a vision change from a migraine, people will actually describe there's form to it, there's shape to it, there's color to it. That's very classic. And the time frame is key with this. With any vision change, one of the things I always ask about is how long did this thing last? And you can really narrow in a differential diagnosis based on how long something lasts. You know, was the vision change you experienced, did it last for 2 seconds? Was it 3 minutes? Or was it 30 minutes? Each of those time frames carry a different differential diagnosis. All right, so a typical ocular migraine is going to last about, you know, 30 minutes or so. And then afterwards, after the vision change goes away, sometimes you get a headache, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you don't. And so that's an interesting aspect of it. Like my dad, he doesn't get migraines. He doesn't get headaches with it. He just has the vision change and it goes away. So everyone's a little bit different. Some people get light sensitive and sound sensitive. They want to, you know, sit in a dark, quiet room. So people come in with this, especially people that have had this for the first time. Some people know this is what happens when they get a migraine and they know it's not concerning. I usually will reassure the patients when they come in that, okay, everything's okay. You're going to be fine. There are certain things that are more concerning for us. So obviously if you have other neurologic symptoms in your body that are happening, if you have slurred speech, if you have, you know, numbness in your arms or legs or notable weakness, anything that, you know, basically sounds like a stroke, like that would be something different, because again, strokes can also affect the occipital lobe, the back part of the brain, which can give you vision changes as well. Typically not like migraine type changes, but you know, we always ask about those things. Any other neurologic deficits, if it's just a migraine, an ocular migraine, then it should just be the vision changes or maybe a headache, but nothing else like systemically. If the patient has repeated migraines, like they're getting more frequent. Like at first they were having them like once or twice a year, but lately they've been having them like at first, like once a week, and then they became like every day they're having a migraine. That's a little bit unusual to have them that frequently. And so that in those situations, you know, you might want to consider getting an MRI. And so sometimes I'll consider doing an MRI just to make sure there's not like a mass occupying lesion, something, a meningioma, a tumor that's triggering these migraines. If the patient has a new headache, where they can like point to one spot on their head, like, oh, when this happens, it always hurts right here. I can point to it. That's a little unusual. It makes you think, oh, could there be something there that's causing them to have this headache? So that's when I start also thinking about getting an MRI. Also, the location of the vision change, often it'll move around a bit, all right? But if it's consistently always, bam, in that same spot, and the migraines, if they're happening more frequently, I start to get a little bit concerned. Like, that's interesting. Maybe we can consider doing an MRI. So there's a number of situations where I'll consider doing an MRI. But if it's like your just classic ocular migraine happens, you know, every so often, maybe a few times a year, even once a month isn't that frequent for some people. Then, you know, we won't jump to neuroimaging, but if any of these unusual signs or symptoms start popping up or just doesn't follow a typical pattern, then, you know, either I'll go and order the migraine myself, talk with the if they have an established neurologist that manages their migraines, I might talk with them and see what they think. That's the rundown. That's how it works with ocular migraines. All right. Those migraine sufferers out there, I really feel for you because it's tough. I know I have a colleague that has really severe migraines and he takes injections for them. They can really be debilitating and really put you out for days at a time. So I really sympathize with all you migraine sufferers out there. So there's a lot to it. I wish I could tell you more about treatment. But that's not me again. One of the things I love so much being a comprehensive ophthalmologist is sending patients to people who are much smarter than me. It's one of the joys of not being fellowship trained. All right. I do my best. I'll do everything I can, but if I don't feel comfortable with it, I always have people that did so much more training, did all those extra years, that are just more knowledgeable about these things and are more than happy to help out. So anyway, that's all I got for you on ocular migraine. All right. It's kind of fun to talk about. You know, patients are always interested in it and just being able to explain this weird thing that's happening to their vision, right? That's so it's fun to counsel patients like this and just also hear their descriptions of their mind. It's always fun to hear descriptions of vision changes. People can come up with all kinds of interesting ways to describe what they're seeing. Okay, so what else did we have left to do? Oh, I didn't do the eyeball. Don't do that eyeball tip of the week. I think we covered it pretty well with the glasses cleaning talk. So, here's one. We have a couple minutes, so I'll do one more here. So, at Corey says, would love a little blurb about post-operative corneal abrasions. In our residency, we have a treatment algorithm we created with ophthalmology for these patients, but would enjoy a short discussion about this. I can do a short discussion about this. So post-operative corneal abrasions happen. Well, what is that actually? So we talked about corneal abrasions before, right? The top layer of the cornea, the epithelium, gets pulled off some way. Trauma is the most common way. And then you get this really painful scratch on the eye. So this can happen after surgeries in which the patient is under general anesthesia, because with general anesthesia, your muscles are paralyzed, right? And so what'll happen is the eyelids won't be completely closed. They'll be partially closed. And often what'll happen is the anesthesiologist or the nurse or somebody on the OR team, they will put a piece of tape directly over the eyelid, all right, to just keep the eyes closed so they don't dry out. I love it. I love that. Thank you for doing that. It's wonderful. So a post-op abrasion can happen through a couple of different ways. One is they don't quite get the eyelid closed before they put tape on it. So trauma from just manipulating the eyelid, the tape, making sure the eyelid's closed, like you just pull it closed, make sure it's completely closed when you put the tape on it to keep it closed. Or if they forget to put the tape on. So that can happen too. You know, they're doing a lot of things. You're trying to keep the patient alive, trying to operate, there's so many steps to surgery that that's one that can be overlooked, is because it's not a critical thing, right? It's not gonna die from not having your eyelids taped, but you could end up with a corneal abrasion. So that's one thing. Also, if it's gonna be a particularly long case, often you'll go ahead and put some ointment, some lubrication in the eye, and then also tape it closed, all right? So there's like an extra step of lubrication to make sure the corneas stay nice and healthy. I'd say that's not always necessary. As long as you close the eyes safely, put a good piece of tape right over it to keep it closed, all right, patient's going to be fine. They're not going to have an abrasion when they wake up. So I like having a protocol. It's a good way. It's a good protocol to have, because the last thing you want is for someone to wake up from general surgery in searing pain from their eyes having an abrasion. Because again, corneal abrasion pain in someone with healthy corneas, that's like 10 out of 10 pain. It's really bad. It heals, but that's all the patient's going to remember when they wake up, is you gave me a painful eye. And so avoiding that at all costs, very important. Protocols are a great way to do that. So thank you for that, at Corey. And that's our episode for today. I hope you've all gotten to work on time listening to this, or gone to bed. Maybe you're asleep and I'm just droning away and you're going to wake up in the middle of the night. You still have your earbuds in, or whatever it is. That happens to me sometimes. I listen to podcasts as I go to sleep. My voice can be a bit soporific. So anyway, thank you for listening. That's it. Again, I am Dr. Glaucon Flecken. Special thanks to our producers, Dr. Will Flannery, that's me, Aaron Corney, Rob Goldman, Shanti Brook, editor and engineer is Jason Portizo. Our music is by Omer Ben-Zvi. Knock Knock Eye is a Human Content production. We'll see you next time, everyone.